Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, makers of specialty cheese from Switzerland, crafted with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmiusa.com. That's emmiusa.com.
You are listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. This season, we are showcasing stories from the inaugural class of Changing Narratives Africa Fellowship, a highly selective program for African food entrepreneurs who are ready to scale their brands into global markets. The organization's vision is to see proudly African food and beverage brands on the shelves of all the major grocery chains and e-commerce sites in the world, because they are high quality, healthy, and taste good. Here's this week's conversation. So welcome to another episode of Item 13. I am honored to have in this, I'm going to say in the studio, but yeah, in my home studio, NNZ, one of our Changing Narratives Africa fellows, Ebun Feludu. This is me practicing my Nigerian names.
Ebun Feludu,
yes. I'm actually really excited to talk to you about your story in particular, just based on what I've read. Very impressive background, which is not surprising for all of the fellows that I'm talking to. But welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And one, I appreciate you joining me late on a Friday in Nigeria, in Ibadan in particular. And secondly, I wanted to kick off with your story. So I wanted to start off with, who are you? Like, what's your background in terms of where you grew up, your educational and even professional background, and how you landed in, generally, broadly speaking, in the food space?
Okay. So, yes, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited about the Changing Narratives Fellowship and this chat. I grew up in Ibadan, which is the city where I am right at this moment. I'm here at the moment because my kids go to school in Ibadan. So I kind of shuttle in between Lagos and Ibadan. My factories obviously are, and my home, they're all in Lagos, but we still kind of shuttle back and forth from here. So I grew up here in the city surrounded by seven hills, as they call it. And I'm also from here. I'm a daughter of the soil, as they say. And I'm very proudly Ibadan, very, very proud of. And I think the way they put Ibadan in perspective for maybe like the US audience is like New York, New Jersey.
I see.
Yeah, so Ibadan probably be like your New Jersey and Lagos would be like your New York. And they're exactly that sort of distance apart, about an hour apart. You can get on a train and, you know, now, because since last year, there's this train now that connects the two cities. There's the expressway. It's just an hour away. So yeah, there's a lot of educational institutions in Ibadan. So I grew up sort of going to UI, to Chenchedol for concerts and plays, you know, and things like that. And that's sort of how I grew up. And then my mother studied agriculture. So she always had our hands, all of us, in soil, picking out the weeds. And if you know Ibadan is a place where you have space, right? It's not as much a concrete jungle like Lagos or New York is.
Yeah.
So in any home, you would find a lot of like yard space and all of that. And so the options were either grass or, you know, concrete. And for many people, it was grass or lawns and stuff like that. But my mom had us tending to these things. And that was, I guess, maybe my first exposure to greens. And then my grandfather, whom I never met, actually. My paternal grandfather was a very famous cocoa merchant.
Oh, okay.
In the south, in the Southwest, yeah. My father was nothing like that. He was very sort of academic, corporate guy, you know, engineering.
Opposite, yeah, probably opposite. And probably wanted to go far away from his.
Yeah, his dad, so the green bug kind of skipped a generation on my on my paternal side. But I love greens. I love, like, if you come to my home, I love flowers. I love gardening. I have like my herb gardens. I have my, you know, my flowers. And I always say to people, I love the idea of putting a little thing into something and seeing it, you know, sort of become this big thing. And I guess that's why I love manufacturing as well. But before I started, you know, processing coconuts or cracking coconuts, my background was actually media. So when I finished from university, I worked, you know, with a number of media companies, and then I set up my own media company. Then only 6 years ago did I actually start to channel my love for agro-processing into JAM, the coconut food company. So yeah, that's a bit of a sort of quick.
It's so interesting as you explain, like, growing up in Ibadan and having your hands, so to speak, in the soil, if you will. Like, it evoked for me growing up in Accra, even, which is also a concrete jungle of its own. But I remember just growing up, I feel like we also had more space. And I just remember, like, being a kid running around the neighborhood, like, we would, especially when we had what we called our long vacation, the kids in the neighborhood, we would plant, like, vegetables, and, like, we would cook, we would make little fires with, like, stones and sticks and try to, it's just, and, you know, like, we would go around and pick fruits from, like, I remember how green it was, like, as you were talking, it just took me back to childhood and how I think now, I'm hoping to take my daughter to Ghana for the first time this year. And I think about how Accra will just look different, you know, from the perspective of what she would experience, I suppose, you know, like, right. But interesting times. Anyway, this is a really interesting background. So you sort of have that in your family lineage, if you will. And then you decided to start JAM, the coconut food company. My first question for you, which I guess a train, like, I was really kind
there
of
is running. A train going by. I was just about to tell you. So our train system, let's just give it a few minutes, it'll come through.
Oh, okay.
My home is very close to a train track.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hard to imagine in Ibadan. my Ibadan. This is one of the sounds we hear, especially at this time of the day.
That's okay. One of my favorite podcasts, the host interviews, she interviews from LA, but she also lives just next to a lot of activity. So sometimes, like, she'll post her show and she's like, I'm sorry, you're just gonna have to hear this. I need to back
up. I know.
this is just how it's gonna be. So I understand. It sounds like the train is gone, so we can.
Yeah, it has.
So I wanted to talk about JAM, the coconut food company. And my first question to you is, like, why JAM? Because I remember when I saw it the first time, I thought, wait, is this a jam company that makes coconut jam? And so I was like, my instinct was like, why JAM? My guess would be that it's an acronym for something. Or
absolutely,
someone,
absolutely, absolutely.
I was like,
you know what is so funny? When I was growing up, my mother had a company that had this sort of acronym thing, and I just thought, please, can you not come up with something a bit more clever? You know, like, why does it have to be acronyms? And here I am, you know, one generation later, doing the very same thing. So, well, actually, very specifically, I've set up and run, you know, many different companies, but I turned 40 and I wanted to build a legacy business. And I just sort of had my children in mind, something that I could sort of leave for them, something that would be here for all time. So yes, it is an acronym of my children's names. And it's almost like a gift to them, really. this company. And
oh, that is so special.
Yeah. Because I feel like all my other businesses were like lifestyle businesses, you know. But with this one, my approach has been sort of building something that I desire that will be here in the next 100 years. So my approach was completely different, very long-term, very legacy focused, you know, and all of that. So yeah, that's
interesting.
That's where Jam comes from.
Cool.
But we are an integrated coconut processing company. And as a coconut company, there's so many things that we're able to create. We just kind of take our time and start, you know, to layer one after the other. We started with coconut milk. No, actually, let me dial back. We started with a coconut banana loaf, which my kids actually used to sell at kids' fairs and sell out. It was like a famous recipe we had.
Okay.
And they just used to take it and sell it out. And then we moved on from there to coconut milk because I was so lactose intolerant.
Oh, I see.
Had to kind of switch to coconut milk. And then we went on to coconut oil and basically started adding product after product. So now our offerings go from foods to personal care to living products like bowls made from coconut shells activated charcoal or cocoa peats made from the husks. So yeah.
Oh, interesting. So I was going to ask you what you mean by integrated coconut processing company. And that's exactly what you mean, that like all parts of the coconut then are used for different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, got it. Okay, cool. That's awesome. And then in terms of just from ideation to like your first client, so I want to connect the dots for people. So if someone's sitting in New Jersey, for example, and is listening to you, like, a child of Ibadan who has found themselves in New Jersey and is thinking about, you know, an idea they have, whether they're going to do something related to the continent or not. How do you go from this idea of like, I want to do something with coconut, or like, I want to do something that's a legacy business and, you know, the idea is coconut processing across the value chain. How did you go from that to getting your first client, for example? Then maybe also funding a little bit, although that will be different depending on which part of the world you're in. But we can touch on that a little bit too.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can talk about funding a little later, but it was bootstrapping for a long time and maybe taking money from my media company and pouring it into
Okay.
And then, yeah, loans and, you know, eventually loans and then grants and then, you know, all of these other things. Okay. For, you know, I feel that when you start a business, the posture with which you start the business is really important. And so even though we're this completely unknown company, I've always been big on capturing the vision into a brand. So we were able to kind of deliver a strong brand from day one. So one of our first partners was a really big coffee chain, coffee store, basically, and they had a chain across Lagos and they're called Neo Cafe.
Oh yeah, I know Neo Cafe.
You know them, yeah.
I've been to one of the places in Lagos. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I would have coffee with coconut milk and it's just absolutely delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically said to them, you know, like, I feel that you must have customers who are lactose intolerant. I'm not the only one in Lagos who's lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
And they go, yes, 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 yes. And that's how we started. That was like a very big, you know, maybe in the eyes of other businesses, small, but for us, it was really big to have that brand partnership in the very early days, you know, of the business. So that happened. And then we rolled out we said, okay, what other products can we create out of this? Oh, in addition to that, because of my media company had a partnership with the Women Economic Forum with headquarters in India.
I see. And they
had said to me, oh, everyone bring the Nigerian women for this conference. And I've been doing conferences at that point for maybe about 20 years. And I said to them, I'd love to, you know, but I'm kind of up to my ears at conferences. This is what I'd really like. I'd really like to have an immersion sort of time in the south of India across the value chain of coconut processing. Can you hook that up for me? And they said, sure. So it turned out the family, the family that organizes the Women Economic Forum, they also own universities in India. And so they had a university in Kerala. And basically, they hosted me there after the conference. They had a car and driver for me. And they had set up all of these different factories for me to work in. So they would come 6 a.m. Yeah. I mean, that for me is such an early, big gift, very early in the game. So they would send a driver for me early in the morning in my hotel room, who would drive hours and hours and go to this organic farm or this organic processor or this university that studies like different species of seedlings. And so I did that and then came back, and my vision was just so much bigger. Shortly after that, we got an order from the biggest pharmacy chain in Nigeria, Health Plus. And then it was just sort of one.
Just off to the races, essentially.
Yeah. after the other, it was a lot of hard work. Don't get me wrong. It sounds glamorous. I remember a neighbor of mine, you know, she once saw me making the coconut milk myself. Mm-hmm. And she thought, why are you putting yourself through so much torture? And in my heart, I really laughed, like, if only you saw what I was seeing, you know. This is nothing compared to where I'm going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's
incredible. And I think about like all of the, I don't know if it was even Ndidi who mentioned this, but just how, and depending on, you know, sort of your faith background, right? Like how, when you put stuff into the universe or you have that intention, how sometimes all of the dots start to align, you know, and it's up to you. And actually, as you're talking, sometimes it's like whether it's a God-given like thing that you need to put out in the world or however you see it. I think sometimes people just don't grab onto it and take that first step, right? Because I think that courage in taking that first step for you, and I'm sure you also have because of your experience, you know, before in putting out other businesses, but I think for those who are listening, for the, you know, trying to do that first time thing, and for my own experience, it's that ability to take the first step to just do it, so to speak, that you will start to see the other things that could potentially align that you couldn't see before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've just found that in different spheres of life. And so that's interesting how, like, you know, once you, and I don't want to underscore, like, obviously, like, you know, with wealth and everything else, like all of the support you got and obviously hard work you put into it, but you took advantage of, there's a quote about how opportunity and what is it? There's something about luck and hard work.
Opportunity favors the brave or preparation.
So it's not just luck, but you also
have opportunity favors the prepared.
Exactly. So
today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, makers of specialty cheese from Switzerland, crafted with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere in the United States. But that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach Cave Age cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmiusa.com. That's emmiusa.com.
One of the interesting things that I was reading about your business also is the makeup of your workforce, that it's mostly women, so 80% women.
Yeah.
And for those women, the work that they do for you accounts for pretty much a majority of their household income. And so through your company also, you're not just creating legacy for your family, but you're also enabling particularly women to be able to support their families, probably educate, you know, children, helping create that economic you know, helping them be self-sustaining.
Yeah, breaking that cycle of poverty. With many women, you see, one of the greatest, especially in this part of the world at least, one of the greatest burdens they have is educating their children, giving their children the best education. And I feel from my experience that that burden is heavier on women than men. And so when women see a channel through which they can make that dream come true for their children, they really sit down and they focus on that work that's making, you know, that dream come true. So we do a lot in terms of empowering our women, training them, giving them opportunities. This year, for instance, we've launched a cooperative which basically invests in other businesses, which we can either set up or invest in. So it's a pool of fund that basically gives interest for all our staff to share over and above their salaries. Just because, there's just, I don't know, there's no end to the things that we kind of want for our families and want for our children. And as a company, I just feel that we need to be so committed to our people. Because, you know, it's on the back of our people that we're building anything, any legacy or something. Yeah. We need to build that legacy together, basically.
Yeah, that's incredible. Wow, that's incredible. And then in that vein, I guess separately too, I know that you either founded or are part of an all-woman board who invest also in like female farmers.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that too? Like, I'm interested. And I say this also for like a diaspora audience who may not be entrepreneurially minded, but may have like, you know, cash to spend or invest. If there are opportunities to either invest through an organization you have, or even supporting your business, just giving them information that will enable them to do that.
Yeah. So iGrow is something that I set up when, even before JAM. I was very curious to, I was very interested in investing in the agricultural value chain. And I just looked at how much I had on my own. I thought, you know, how far can this go? And I basically reached out to other women and said, listen, let's pull funds together. I believe very firmly in the concept of pooled resources, whether it's pooled funds for loans or pooled knowledge, basically, or resources or whatever. And so I said to about five other women, let's pull our resources together. You know, if we have 5 times 6, that's 30 or whatever, whatever multiple. If it's 100, if it's in the millions, whatever multiple it is, 5 becomes 30 when we're a pool. And then we invest that money into various things. So we invested in, you know, export of our vegetables to the UK. We did a few transactions and the company has now become very quiet. It has actually now morphed into iGrow Trees, which is now focused on planting trees, basically.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. But it's interesting to me how, like, I actually even thought this was something that you thought about after JAM, but it's interesting
In fact, iGrow invested in JAM. iGrow gave JAM a loan because they saw how much fire I was putting into JAM. They were just like, listen, we need to put some of our funds in this thing. And so that happened. You know, and they got their interests, you know, or we got our interests cashed out that way.
Yeah. So I'm also now curious about the lessons you took from India. And then, because I've also, like, I remember back a few years ago, like I went to Brazil for a thing, and we went to, like, you know, factories and all of that. It was all exciting and like interesting. It's like, oh, how, you know, how can we, when we come back to, you know, when we're back in Ghana, how can we, you know, implement some of this stuff? And it's just, it's a whole, even though India is also developing, it's just like a whole, in Brazil too, you know, BRICS or whatever, it's part of emerging economies. It's just different in West Africa. And so you go to India, you know, you get that understanding of processing distribution, I'm assuming marketing, all of that across the value chain. And then you come back to Nigeria. I'm wondering, like, how did you reconcile sort of the lessons you learned with the challenges of the ecosystem in Nigeria for this, you know?
Well, you know, you've said it, that there are so many parallels between India and Nigeria. There are so many places you go to in India, you feel like you're in Nigeria, really. yeah. And the factories I went to, some were very big, mm-hmm. some were medium, some were small. So it was quite, I mean, but they were all bigger than what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just... I remember very clearly, iGrow was trying to put money in the business before the trip. I said, no, I need to go and see. And I always say to people, it's really important what you feed your eyes with, because it really determines the extent to which you can dream. Yeah. So if you've never seen it before, you don't really know it's possible. Mm-hmm. I remember even times when I've taken my women for training, and maybe at the training, maybe I've engaged the people before and I understand sort of like the limiting words they say. I always say to them, discountenance any of those words, because this is where we are going. So for me, going there and seeing all that, it was bigger than what I was doing. So it stretched me. It stretched me to see how far and how big I could make this business. Mm-hmm. And I've seen even bigger things than what I saw in India. And that just kind of helped me to not be small. Yeah. Because I knew I didn't leave a decent business in media to come and do mom and pop shop. So basically, I was out there to feed myself with everything that could validate all of my wildest dreams that I had for this business. So India was amazing because, you know, it helped for me to create evidence for my wild dreams, that I could step into and create, basically.
Great. And then that is a good segue into the Changing Narratives Africa Fellowship, and sort of how that then is going to help propel your business further into like that vision that you have for it. So starting with just how you found out about the program how did you find out about the program?
Okay, so you know, I've told you I'm very big about maybe I haven't said that, but women's networks.
Oh, okay.
I am in so many different networks, and for me, the networks, what they are is they form a pool. Mm-hmm. So you have 10 women in this network, for instance. I mean, that's a small number, and these 10 women have 10 different opportunities, and they throw it in the pool. So that each woman now has 10 opportunities to explore.
Oh, cool.
Rather than just the one that she would have had if she was sitting by herself.
Yeah.
So this is just a note to people listening as well. You know, like it really helps to work, you know, in groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely must have heard of it first from one of these groups. But what was really interesting is so many people sent it directly to me saying this sounds like what is perfect for you, because what Changing Narratives was saying is we're looking for export ready products that will do well on the international market. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was so beautiful that people shared these things with me and saying, you are that person, your product is that product that we see on international shelves. Basically, that's what that was. And so I applied and went through several rounds of being shortlisted and then getting that wonderful email saying
I'd gotten in
as a fellow. And for me, what was the attraction? Mm-hmm. Export has always been big on my mind. It's something, I mean, we've worked with NEPC, we've gone through a lot of training, even gotten support to get us ready for export capacity. and all of that, where we all know about what's going on with our Naira, and, you know, we all are trying to sort of earn that foreign currency because it's more stable, and all of that. And so yeah, that's my changing narrative story.
And what has been your experience so far in terms of, because I believe it kicked off at the world, I guess it's only been a few weeks, but what has been your experience so far, and what do you anticipate taking away from it?
The experience has been phenomenal. Two major things have happened already. Well, maybe three. We've spoken to other Nigerians who don't even live here, live over there, either in the US or Canada, and they are supplying their products to stores like Whole Foods and Target and Walmart and things like that, which is what we all aspire to do. And then we had books by Seth Goldman signed and sent to us.
I saw that,
The founder of Honest Tea. I honestly, I hope that somehow the universe gets him to listen to this, because I desperately want him to be my mentor. Every single word in that book, it just felt like I wrote the book almost. In terms of, you know, doing business, like social impact work, and just everything.
Yeah.
And then we had the call with him on Zoom. Oh my God. I mean, I just love his mind. I loved his journey. And for me, I just felt like, okay, it's so great to see that there are other humans, you know, like this out in the world. So that was a huge highlight. We already have a commitment from a retail chain in the US that wants to take the fellows' products. So we started that process already. I mean, even looking at the numbers and the projections, that's very exciting. And to think all of this is for free, it's just amazing.
That's great. That's phenomenal. You're right. The right word to use is phenomenal. That's amazing. And for those of us who straddle between sort of the diaspora and the continent, and I guess especially for me, I should say, I'm so jazzed to see African food products on the shelves. I see so many and talking about ethnic food aisles is a separate conversation. But when you go to the grocery store and you see the ethnic food aisle, I'm for a continent as big as Africa and for the variety of foods we have, we are so underrepresented. So
absolutely.
I'm really excited to see how this grows, because this is just an inaugural class, right? And so I can only imagine with time, what the impact of this will have. For the industry going forward. One of my last questions for you, I want to understand, you've touched on it a little bit about legacy and sort of the impact you have on women and helping your employees also buy into the success of JAM. But if you could articulate it for us, what's the big vision? What's next for you, I guess? And then what's sort of the really big picture vision you have for JAM as we wrap up here?
Well, one of our next things is our coconut plantation. And for me, it's a village, you know. The vision is a coconut village of 500 hectares with a school and a clinic. A factory, and a whole lot of women.
Wow.
What was this movie? Was it Aquaman? What movie was that with Land Island that had just a bunch of women, just women on it? One of these Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Or was it DC?
I don't even know. I'm not good at keeping track of which one is which.
Anyway, that one. So
that
this one. Island with all of these women, and so that is my vision for you to come there and you see, you know, a place that is run by 80% women.
So
we're training women to basically empowering them as smallholder farmers within the village, so that we can offtake from them and process the coconuts from there, and then, you know, ship out to the world. That's the vision. That way,
I just got goosebumps.
That's the vision, and I love vision boarding, you know, or visioning basically. And the more I sit, you know, in those visions, the more they come alive. So yeah, I really want to see a lot more women empowered. I know what it means.
Yeah.
You know, I know the impact of a woman empowered in terms of on her community, on her children, and being able to be a channel to see that happen would be such a privilege.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And of course, I want to see our products all over the world, all over the US. This is the backbone.
Yeah,
of how
that's
going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I know it will happen. I'm so confident that it will.
That's amazing. Before we transition to the quick rapid fire questions, can you let people know where to find you online? So where can they buy your products? What's your social media website situation?
Okay, so our Instagram, which is one of our most engaging platforms, is at Jam Coconut Foods. That's JAMCOCONUTFOODS at Jam Coconut Foods on Instagram. And our website is www.jamcoconutfoods.com. On the website, you can click on there and purchase any of our products. The whole, spectrum of products is available there.
The whole shebang, yeah. And I will include the links to both websites and social media handles on the show notes when this goes out, so people can find you all on there. Okay, so to wrap up very quickly, we have these fun rapid fire segments that we do with all of our guests just to get a sense of who you are. And it's like, don't think about it, just whatever comes first to mind. So we'll just do a couple of these to wrap up here.
Okay.
The first one is sweet or salty?
Salty.
Salt. You're not a sweet.
I
feel like coconut.
Sweet.
Oh, I guess coconut.
Yeah, but coconut. When you say sweet, you're thinking artificial sweet.
Not necessarily. Does it have to be
really?
Artificial sweet? Okay.
Yeah, but I'd say salty. I'm not a sweet tooth at all.
Yeah. Okay. Salty. And then coffee or tea?
Oh gosh, that is so hard. Tea. Yeah.
And then just like and then.
But there is a wonderful thing I do with coconut milk and coffee. It's the bulletproof coffee.
I feel like good. That. and then I guess the last one is a Netflix show. What Netflix show are you watching? Would you recommend? Because I feel like that's a global platform that anybody can.
I must sound like the worst person because let me tell you, I only watch TV in December. I never have time to watch TV.
Oh, but that, interesting. I probably watch too much TV. Okay.
So last December, I binged on the entire Bridgerton series.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
What did I watch this December? I'm trying to remember. Okay, so I totally got into Ryan Reynolds, and I saw this movie.
Red Notice. Red Notice. Yes, with The Rock too, right?
Yeah, with The Rock and Gal. I think I watched that. I watched a number of other things, but that comes to mind because I'm totally, you know, into his whole style of marketing and all of that. which I watch on YouTube as well. I think it's super interesting. So yeah,
that's a media person. Cool. Well, that's it. We landed on 45 minutes to the minute. Thank you so much. You have an incredible, impressive story. I love your vision to make an impact in the world, especially through women farmers. And I look forward to seeing how, your business grows.
Thank you so much.
Year after year after year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time and thank you for giving us some of your Friday.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.